The Food and Drug Administration approved a new drug for treating early stages of Alzheimer's that would help slow cognitive decline. The new drug, called lecanemab, will be sold under the name Leqembi. The FDA pointed to research showing the drug could help with cognitive decline, brain function, and overall quality of life for people living with Alzheimer's, but there are some serious potential side effects and a heavy price tag. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you or someone you know has Alzheimer's, are you hopeful that a drug like this could make a difference? Have you experienced other Alzheimer's medications as a patient, a loved one thereof, a healthcare provider? What was the experience like? What questions do you have about this drug and Alzheimer's treatment and prevention? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Nate Chin is a geriatrician at UW Health and medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also medical director of the RAP study. Dr. Chin, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Before we get to this particular drug, as I understand it, Alzheimer's, we don't have a lot of treatments available. It's a difficult-to-treat disease. What is the state of the art out there when it comes to Alzheimer's treatment before these new drugs come along?
Well, when we think of medication treatments, we have two classes of drugs that are really meant to address symptoms. So they do not address the underlying disease that is Alzheimer's disease, and they reduce the frequency of symptoms. Now, there was an approval in 2021 of a drug called aducanumab or Aduhelm, which was the first ever that was approved to address the actual process of Alzheimer's, which is this protein called amyloid protein, and that drug removed it very much like lecanemab does.
Does removing these amyloids help with the progression of Alzheimer's?
Well, that's really the main question, Rob, and that's really what the science is looking at. And it's been a very hotly debated topic for many years now. The aducanumab, there's other drugs like it. These are called monoclonal antibodies. And certainly lecanemab would argue that by removing amyloid protein, there are what we call downstream effects, positive changes that happen that reduce the buildup of other proteins or other processes that lead to thinking changes. So possibly this is quite meaningful.
Okay, so here's this new drug, lecanemab. What, first of all, is the promise? What kind of positive results were we seeing in the trials on this medication?
So the most recent trial, this is a phase 3 trial of about 1,800 people. Those that were on it showed a 27% reduced decline based on a validated research / clinical tool called the Clinical Dementia Rating Scale. And so 20% slowing of decline. So it's not stopping progression, it's not curing or reversing decline, it is slowing the rate at which someone is experiencing changes.
And this is at the early stages of Alzheimer's. So what are we looking at in terms of diagnosing a patient and saying, yes, the timing is right, this might be an appropriate drug?
I appreciate that question because as a person in a memory clinic, it's really hard to actually diagnose Alzheimer's disease. We diagnose the experience, the syndrome of thinking change. And so when someone says early Alzheimer's disease, what they're really meaning is someone who's been diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment or MCI or mild stage dementia. And in dementia, a person has a functional day-to-day activity change. And so those two stages are what they're referring to. And when they say Alzheimer's, they're saying that this protein is present or the clinician strongly suspects that Alzheimer's disease is causing mild cognitive impairment or mild stage dementia.
Well, now there are other causes of dementia, right? How do we decide we're sure enough that this is Alzheimer's to use something that targets these amyloids associated with Alzheimer's?
It's this idea of multiple etiology dementia or multiple etiology cognitive impairment is a really important factor in this. And so the presence of having amyloid protein and tau protein really confer this diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And so, in the trial, they used an amyloid PET scan or spinal fluid, which can happen clinically. Spinal fluid is much easier to obtain and do. But those are the ways that we identify the actual process of Alzheimer's disease, or actually say that a person has Alzheimer's disease. There are other things that we can do to rule out other potential causes, such as vascular disease, which is very common, and that's through an MRI scan. Clinicians, astute neurologists, geriatricians, psychiatrists, primary care providers can certainly evaluate for things like Parkinson's disease or a similar condition called Lewy body disease. But there isn't a very concrete way of identifying those. Those we call these biomarkers. There's not really a blood test or a scan that can confirm that. And so there's always a little bit of uncertainty as to the presence of other potential conditions when even talking about Alzheimer's disease.
We're talking to Dr. Nate Chin, geriatrician at UW Health, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Looking at this newly approved drug, the FDA signed off on it to treat early Alzheimer's to help reduce cognitive decline. It's headline news because, as we just heard, there aren't a lot of treatments like this. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, your hopes for this or other medications, your experiences, maybe your own, your family, or if you're a healthcare provider, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Chin, we talked about the positives here, the reduction in the rate of cognitive decline in early Alzheimer's with this new medication. People have raised concerns about some of the side effects. What are those concerns?
Well, the main one that we hear about and certainly read about is something called ARIA, A-R-I-A. And that just is an acronym for amyloid-related imaging abnormality. It's a mouthful, which is why we often call it ARIA. And what we know is that these medications, these monoclonal antibodies, they tend to have this radiographic, this imaging result where people can either have swelling or fluid called effusion, so ARIA-E, or they can have small bleeding in the brain called ARIA-H. And so this, in the first drug, aducanumab, this was really a hotly debated part of the conversation because the risks were quite high. The ARIA that was present was in larger numbers. With lecanemab, at least based on the phase 3 studies, it seems to be present but at lower percentages. So just for example, being on the medication, 12.6% of people had ARIA-E, the effusion, versus 1.7% that were on the placebo. Of those that had it, most of them did not actually have symptoms and so didn't need to change the medication. But those that did experienced real problems, headaches, visual disturbances, confusion. The bleeding is the one that really makes the news because nobody wants to have bleeding in the brain. And so certainly that was present in the medication. When it was just looking purely at bleeding, it was about 9% of people who were on lecanemab versus just about 8% of people who were on the placebo. But that means that even people not on the drug were still having some of these bleeding events. But it's still significant enough that we have to discuss this. We have to really look at who's at risk of developing those bleeds and who do we need to potentially not use this medication with.
And this medication, not cheap, a 5-digit price tag for a year of treatment, I think, and not easy to use. You have to go in, I believe, to a clinic, and this is something that is injected or in an IV?
Correct. And in fact, it's not even a clinic. It's an infusion. So imagine chemotherapy. You're going into an infusion center where you're being hooked up to an IV line. And for a period of time, you're receiving this medication. And so it's every other week or roughly twice a month that you go in for this period of time. And there's an infusion center cost, there's staff costs, there's imaging that goes with it. So that price tag that you may read about, that's really just for the price of the medication. It's not really including all of the other things that go with it, especially the MRI scans. And in the study, they had 5 MRI scans. As long as you didn't have symptoms, they had 5 MRI scans just to be on, just while you're on this drug.
Wow. Okay. So this is the tough part of medicine, and not that there's easy parts, but we've got these benefits in terms of slowing down cognitive decline. We've got the side effects we've talked about. We've got this high price tag. How do we decide this patient is going to benefit from this drug? It's going to outweigh the risks and the costs.
Well, I mean, that's the tough question, and that's certainly something that the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, and Medicare are going to be weighing in on. They're going to have to determine the risk-benefit, cost-benefit analysis of this. And I think really at the heart of this question is something that's been really nagging at the field, which is what is clinical meaningfulness? What is it that we will define as this is worth that risk? And I think that's a subjective question. Each person really has to consider that themselves. But from a public health or institutional perspective, what is it that we're going to say is meaningful? I told you 27% reduced decline, and our statisticians have been able to say, well, that's roughly 4 to 6 months of prolonging a person at their current state. So if you're in mild cognitive impairment, you will be in that stage for 4 to 6 months longer, or in mild stage dementia. I mean, to many people, Rob, that would be very significant and worth the cost. And so it's something that really has to be discussed.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. My mother had Alzheimer's disease later in life, and I thought I heard on the radio or one of the media about some new study, memory study for those that thought they might have some memory impairment. I wonder if the doctor knows anything about that.
John, thanks for the call. Dr. Chin, I assume this kind of study is going on around the country all the time. Are there any studies you have your eye on that might be recruiting people, especially to look at the progression of memory impairment?
I mean, you're right, Rob. There are many studies happening, even including here in Madison, Wisconsin. You mentioned the ADRC and RAP. These are longitudinal observational studies. And so people who are cognitively healthy but at risk, maybe they have a family history, they can come in and we assess them on a yearly or biannual, so every other year basis, where we do tests and we watch them and we do these lumbar punctures and PET scans to see how the brain is aging. But also, and perhaps this is what John is referring to, there is this incredible study called the AHEAD study. And this is a national, it could even be an international study, where they're using the same drug. So this is lecanemab. They're using this drug, but in people who do not have impairment on testing, they most likely either don't have symptoms or just subtle symptoms, but they also have amyloid in their brain. And so in Madison, Dr. Cindy Carlson, who is our clinical trials director and one of my colleagues in the ADRC, she's leading this study. So people are receiving the same medication, same dose, and but we're seeing if I ideally, if you can prevent or delay the onset of symptoms. And this is for everyone in the Wisconsin area, that whether you're from Green Bay or Milwaukee, you could potentially come to Madison to receive this therapy. Now, it's randomized controlled, meaning some people receive a placebo, but this is the idea that can we get to people even before they develop symptoms with these types of drugs?
John, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Dr. Nate Chin, geriatrician at UW Health, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Looking at this new drug used to help with cognitive decline for early Alzheimer's, just approved by the FDA. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about these couple now new medications on the market, the benefits, the potential risks and costs, or about treatment and prevention of Alzheimer's in general? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Dr. Nate Chin, geriatrician at UW Health, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, looking at a new medication just approved by the FDA, aimed at helping slow down decline in the early stages of Alzheimer's. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What else do you want to know about lecanemab, this new medication, or wider questions, concerns, experiences maybe with Alzheimer's prevention and treatment? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now with Bill on the line in Milwaukee. Bill, hello.
Good afternoon, everybody. I have a friend. In fact, he's my best friend. He's 84 years old. He's becoming very forgetful. I don't suspect Alzheimer's. Sometimes I wonder if he might have a kind of dementia. I don't know. How do you get your friends in to check on these things to see if they need help? Because I think a lot of times he doesn't remember because he's not really paying attention.
Bill, thanks for the call. Dr. Shin, I think this is a pretty common question that people might ask about themselves or someone they know. How do we distinguish, you know, I'm just not remembering stuff lately from this is an early sign of some form of dementia?
It's a great question, and I appreciate Bill's concern and the fact that he has identified something that he wants to talk to his friend about. And I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. You want to share with the person that you care and that you're noticing some changes. And I would start by actually observing and possibly recording, meaning just writing down some of these changes. And I say that because denial is very powerful. And when you tell someone, or even if it's a loved one, a family member, that there are changes, their initial reaction is going to be, no, that's not true, or there are other reasons for that. And it's nice to be able to say, well, I've observed these things, and this is why I'm concerned. And after that conversation where they know that you're coming from a good place, it would be nice for that person to go speak to their primary care provider to be able to share these things. Also, potentially to have what we call cognitive screening, a thinking test that maybe takes about 10 minutes. And that would tell you that you have a disease. It wouldn't tell you that you have for sure impairment, but it would tell you how your brain is overall performing. And I think the reason that's so important is that there are so many things that can affect our thinking that are not Alzheimer's disease, that are not vascular disease or Parkinson's disease. You could have bad sleep, persistent bad sleep. You could be in a bad mood. It could be a medication side effect. You could have sleep apnea. There are lots of things that we can identify and treat that can be reversed or at least improve a person's symptoms and well-being that are not diseases of the brain. But we can't ever get to that if people are fearful of coming in. And that's the stigma of Alzheimer's and dementias. And we really have to work past that by talking to the people we care about.
Bill, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Dr. Chen, I wanted to ask about prevention of Alzheimer's. Given that our treatment options are still fairly limited, are we making progress in knowing the kinds of things we can do to prevent it occurring in the first place?
And this is really where the field is moving. And I would say, if I could step a little bit further back and not speak specifically to Alzheimer's disease, but say that roughly 40% of dementias are felt to be reversible. And there's this Lancet Commission, and people wanted to Google Lancet. They have come out with known risk factors. And some of these risk factors make sense to us. These are things being inactive, smoking, hearing loss, traumatic brain injury, but even things like environmental pollution. These are things that we think can actually be addressed and prevent the development of dementia, which is sort of this big umbrella term. Alzheimer's disease is harder, and that's why we need to study people over a long period of time to understand what the risk factors are. We certainly speak to, and if anyone ever listens to my podcast, Dementia Matters, they hear me talking about, well, there are really brain healthy habits, exercise, diet, sleep, stress reduction, being social, mentally stimulated activities. These are things that we do believe make an impact. Perhaps they don't prevent it, but they certainly can help the brain function to the best of its ability.
Talking to Dr. Nate Chin from UW Health and the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, looking at a new Alzheimer's medication to help reduce cognitive decline in the early stages of the disease and other things related to treatment and prevention of Alzheimer's. Let's go back to your calls now. Rodney is with us in Prior Lake, Minnesota. Rodney, hello.
Hello, how are you guys doing this afternoon?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Rodney?
Jay, I just caught the tail end, and thank you so much for taking my call. I guess, you know, for both of you, maybe even definitely towards you, Dr. Chin. So here's the background. My father-in-law has recently been diagnosed with, you know, early onset for Alzheimer's. And ever since the summer is when my wife, his daughter, and his other daughter have really gotten involved trying to, you know, get next steps, healthcare, power of attorney, just kind of things like that kind of set in place. And we have noticed quite a dramatic decline just with a lot of his short-term memory, you know, sometimes driving abilities, especially at night, you know, later in the day when, you know, just he's getting fatigued, things like that. And his girlfriend has really, you know, spearheaded a lot of, like, the doctor visits and consults, so I don't have a lot of the information, unfortunately, to share with you. I know a lot of them have been more like the naturopathic way. I know he has a very restrictive diet as far as what he can and cannot eat, reducing a lot of, you know, no more diet sodas and eliminating a lot of sugars, things like that. So My question is, what would you recommend for myself, for my father-in-law, as far as, you know, again, this particular medication that I'm just learning about sounds very intriguing as we continue to do more research.
I got you, Rodney. We don't have a lot of time left. Dr. Chin, in that situation, if Rodney was interested in trying to see, hey, is this medication right for his father-in-law, how does a patient or a family member get started on that?
It's a great question, and I appreciate Rodney and his support of his wife, who is a caregiver to the father-in-law, and that's critical. So being supportive is probably the best thing you can do when thinking about, well, how do I know if I'm appropriate? We really need a diagnosis. And so I would encourage Rodney to create that team of that family, those family members, get a diagnosis. Is this mild cognitive impairment? Is this dementia? If it's dementia, is this mild stage? Those are the two stages in which this medication may be appropriate. And then once that is known, is amyloid present in the brain? Because this medication can only remove amyloid in the brain. So if you don't have amyloid, the medication isn't going to be helpful. And so knowing those two things first is going to be absolutely critical. Although I would still say all the advanced care planning that Rodney's wife and sister have been doing is absolutely essential too.
Thanks for the call, Rodney. And just our last few moments, Dr. Chin, what are you watching for in the field of Alzheimer's treatment?
You know, I would say that I'm looking for more studies to be done on diverse populations. I'm looking for more studies to be done even earlier than what we're seeing. And I'm looking for the combination of not only medications, but those lifestyle factors that we all can engage in right now. So in the end, it's like, because there's multiple things happening in the brain, there's multiple different pathways of Alzheimer's disease. It's not going to be one drug. It's going to be multiple drugs in the context of a certain lifestyle that is the healthiest possible. And I do believe the field is moving in that direction. These are conversations that are happening right now. Certainly, lecanemab is a game changer in a lot of ways, but I think this is really the beginning of a new effort in clinical research.
Dr. Chin, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Dr. Nate Chin, geriatrician at UW Health, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us to talk about a new medication approved by the FDA aimed at helping with cognitive decline in early Alzheimer's. You can also follow Dr. Chin's work and a lot of the latest news with the Dementia Matters podcast about Alzheimer's disease.